Welcome to Trapping Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear, and I hope y'all are doing as well as I am. Oh man, does it feel awesome here today. It's dropped down in the low 50s, wind's blowing, leaves are falling, ducks are flying on the lake, cats are feeling frisky, so it means bobcats are feeling frisky, deer's moving. Oh man, it's great. I'm sitting in my lure shop right now, still got my flip-flops and my shorts on. Because when you're a southerner, let me explain something. When you're a southerner and it cools off, what I've noticed is something drastically different with northerners. We saw this when we was at our trapping school and it just blew my mind. And I don't quite understand it, but I guess in a way that I do. And I'm not picking on anybody. But It got kind of cool at the school, and I noticed, you know, guys from Minnesota and Wisconsin and Michigan, you know, it drops temperature down a little bit, and you put on hoodies and you know, or you put on a coat and, you know, a different hat that's got more insulation in it, and then guys are going, "Aren't you cold?" And I go, "Yeah, I'm loving it." See, the difference between North and South, I guess, because our winter's not as brutal, and our summer's usually more brutal, is when we actually get cool weather or start getting cold weather, we want to relish it. We want to have hard nipples. We want to shiver a little bit. We want to be cold. We want to just revel in the coolness. But what I've noticed with northerners, as soon as it drops down in temperature, you start bringing out more layers, which I don't understand, because you would think 40 or 50 degrees would be really warm to someone that's used to trapping when it's 5 degrees. But that's usually not the case. It's just one of those odd things that I've noticed between trappers, north and south. Most southern trappers, you know, they don't want to put on anything until they start shaking uncontrollably. So they know they've got all the cold in them they can, because like next week, we're supposed to start warming up again. So I may only have 2 or 3 days of this, and I want to make sure that I enjoy it to the max. But another reason I'm doing good is I'm sitting in my shop with my flip-flops and my shorts on, which probably doesn't sound trapping, but hey, that's just the way that it is. It's chilly in here. I had to close the garage doors because the wind's blowing directly in here, and it's kind of loud. But I'm sitting next to a tub of 15 gallons. The aroma is amazing of Simply Mice. Just ground mice. So I know that there's going to be a bunch of people getting happy soon when they order this stuff. And I can't help but to look at my 16-foot American red, white, and blue flag. Now, I know if Biden wins, I'm probably going to have to take it down because it's going to be illegal in the United States of America to be proud of America. But right now, since Trump's still president, I can still look at the stars and stripes and be happy with it. So it's a good day here in Tennessee. I've got Chip Davis coming down. Him and his wife's coming down for the weekend. I'm going to use him as a practice board, which I didn't give this advantage to Jeff, where he's going to drill me with questions. I'm going to use it kind of as a practice thing. We're going to do a podcast for next week because I'm probably going to be seeing Jeff in the next couple of weeks, and I'm going to have him do to me what I did to him. And I know Jeff can be a lot crueler than Chip, but we're going to see how this goes. So I'm using this kind of as a practice round with Chip coming down. So I worked my butt off all week on lures, so me and Chip can sit around and just have a good time this weekend. Our wives can do whatever wives do, and it's just going to be a good weekend. Our season hadn't started here, and I know a lot of y'all's has, and I hope you're not wasting it. I know that some of you are already getting snow, which is hard for me to comprehend. Some of you getting bad weather, freezing ground, stuff like that. Just embrace it, guys, and roll with it the best you can. Learn from it and become a better trapper with it, because if you're going to be trapping in an area like that, you're just going to have to learn to deal with it. And one of these days, I'm going to try to get Dave Wirtz on here where he talks about his Wisconsin snow trapping, because I got to catch part of his demo at me and Jeff's convention this year in Iowa, and I think the boy really knows what he's doing. So I'm going to try to get him on here to talk about that, because that is not my wheelhouse. Not at all. Now, I want to bring up something that may or may not help any of you out there. And I got done today. My blood's flowing a little bit. The day I got done lifting weights, it was baby muscle day. So it was biceps, calves, abs, forearms, stuff like that. Just baby stuff, but it gets the blood moving. And I noticed that my elbows were starting to get almost what you consider tennis elbow. And it was very weird because it's something I normally don't get. But I've gotten this a lot when I was trapping. And from a lot of the research I've done with weightlifting, I figured out how to beat this. And for you guys out there that's going to go really crush it this year, I'm going to give you a simple tip. If you start feeling your elbows starting to get really sore right on the outside, kind of like where your funny bone is on your elbow, and it starts going down into your forearm, you know how that gets sore? It's a real simple thing with a rubber band that can get that under control for you. So if you're not setting a ton of traps and you're not using a hammer a whole lot, you're not skinning a lot of fur, this may not apply to you, but for you that are, pay attention. When we're setting traps, think about you're closing the jaws with your hands, so you're closing your fingers. When you're pulling animals down to skin them, you're getting a tight grip on everything, so your fingers are coming together and you're putting pressure there and you're pulling down on the animal. When you're using a hammer, you've got a tight grip on it. Most of the things in trapping, just like weightlifting, you're actually gripping something. And what that causes is an imbalance. It causes an imbalance in your ligaments and your tendons and your muscles. Because everything is going forward, closing, gripping, stress like that. So a simple thing that you can do, there's two things you can do. One's more simple than the other, but both will work. I don't know where I got these rubber bands from. I know ironmind.com, you can buy these, and I bought them from them years ago, and I really liked them, but I don't know where they're at now. The rubber bands, and they're kind of small, and they come with different degrees of how strong they are. Well, I've ordered something in the last year or two, and I've got these green rubber bands, and they're probably 2 inches round, and they're probably, I don't know, 7/16 wide, and they're pretty powerful. So I get in the habit of, especially when I'm doing a lot of forearm work, that I put those around. You make like a, think about making like an eagle's claw or something with your fingers, where your fingers come down and meet your thumb. You roll the rubber band up till it's just above your fingernails and open your fingers. And you close your fingers and you open your fingers. You close your fingers and you do that for like 4 or 5 sets of 20. And if that becomes too light with the rubber bands that you have, you just put another rubber band on there. You get a stronger rubber band and you keep doing that. The reason this keeps your elbows from getting sore is because it corrects the imbalance that you get from squeezing all the time. And I wish I'd have known this 20 years ago, because I was using a lot of hammers and skinning, you know, a lot of fur every single night, and my elbows just became a mess. And what I think it is now, from what I've learned from lifting weights, it's just a muscle imbalance. And your tendons and everything get used to closing but not open. And then I have a nephew that owns a restaurant, and his main cook started getting this tendonitis in his elbows. And I told him about these Iron Mind rubber bands, and he got them for me. And lo and behold, in about 2 weeks, all his elbow pain was gone. So, because you think about a chef, they're always holding the pans and they're swishing stuff around and they're closing, but you don't do anything that opens. So if you put the rubber bands, if you close your fingers to your thumb and you just spread your fingers out, it lets your body get, it helps you fix the imbalance of always squeezing. And that's what we do as trappers. Everything we do is crunch, but we don't really do anything that opens. and you get an imbalance, you're going to get pain. Now, the other thing you can do, if you don't want to use rubber bands, and since rice is so cheap, next time your wife goes to Costco or Sam's, tell her to pick up a 25-pound bag of rice, put it in a 5-gallon bucket. You don't want to do this when you're sweating because it'll start plumping up the rice and it won't work right. But you make the same gesture with your hands. You close your fingers to your thumb so it kind of looks like a bird's head, and you push that all the way to the bottom of the rice bucket, which is much harder than you think it's going to be. And then I want you to open your fingers, and I want you to raise your hand back out of that rice. Now, all that rice is going to be pushing down, just like the rubber band does, on your fingers, and it's causing all those ligaments and tendons and muscles to have to work to keep your fingers from collapsing. So if you find yourself, if you're really pushing this year on trapping and you find yourself starting to have elbow problems, try this out. You'll be amazed at what it does. It's really simple. You're just correcting an imbalance that you're causing because you're always gripping and crunching and squeezing your hands with pretty much everything we do with trapping. So for you that can help, I hope it helps. And for you that thinks I'm nuts for saying that, I understand. I want to thank our sponsors for the show. We've got the best sponsors in the trapping industry. I have no doubt about that whatsoever. I deal with all the sponsors. I've dealt with them for years. And I know that I can count on them. I can trust them. I don't have to worry about money. I don't have to worry about stuff getting sent out. They always have good products and different things like that. The first one this week is Oki Cable and Trap. He's out of Oklahoma. Oki is a full trapping supply dealer. A lot of times he buys fur. I believe he's buying fur again this year. He's tanning fur for people now. So if you've got fur that you're wanting to get tanned, for goodness sake, give Oki Cable and Trap a call. You can look him up online. There's a link down below, and give him a shot. Jeb's a good guy. He'll tell you the truth, and he'll do what he says he's going to do. Our second one is F&T Fur Harvesters. Everything you need for hunting, trapping, and predator calling. Wait a minute. I said that wrong. Trapping. Well, crap. I've said that like 10,000 times. Now I've got a brain fart. Trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. That's it. That's kind of their logo. Most of y'all know who F&T is. They've got a show that they put out. There's several ones that's coming out this year. Jeff's on several. I've been on one. They do a lot for the trapping industry. But when you call F&T, they got pretty much everything you'd ever want. They got great prices. Their shipping is astronomical. And they just do what they say they're going to do. The other one is Dunlap Lures. Jeff Dunlap is a friend of mine. He's a good friend of mine. He's also another lure maker, and I have no problem promoting his lures because he makes good lures. Most of y'all know him for Hellfire, Cat Reaper, stuff like that. Really, really good lures. He learned this craft from his dad that was doing it back in the 70s. And it's good quality. It'll help you out on your trapping, so give Jeff Dunlap's lure a shot. Dunlap Lures. Then we have Funky Trap Tags and Supplies, which is also the sponsor of Man Strong Podcast. He's got a full line of trapping supplies. He's got stuff for deer, bear, hogs, all kind of equipment for fishing, predator calling. He now is the one that's making the Sleepy Creek stretchers, and the best setters in the world are the aluminum Sleepy Creek body grip. Man, this is going to be a long show if my brain keeps doing this. Setters. The absolute best setters. I've got 5 or 6 pair of them. That's all I've used for years for my 330s is the Sleepy Creek ones, and he's actually making those now. They got great prices. They're really good on shipping, and they're just super professional and super nice. If you ever get to meet him, he's actually a member of the Fur Brigade, so if you're a member of that, you get 10% off from Allen. If you see him at a show, you'll be best friends forever because that's just his personality. He can't help it. He's just one of them guys. But he has a tremendous business because he really treats people right. So what I want to talk about tonight is it's the time of year most people, you know, you've looked at the forums and the YouTube videos and the Facebook pages and all of that. And, you know, it's getting from the dreaming stage of trapping to the you got to go get it done stage of trapping. And I want you to think about what you're doing when you're going out. Because what I've got written down is 7 different ways to run a line. 7. Depending on your personality, depending on your time schedule, depending on your country, depending on the land access that you have, on a lot of different factors, you may be running a line totally different than somebody else. But what I want you to do is consciously understand the type of line you're running and isn't it best for what you need to be doing. Because trapping season seems like, depends on where you're at, like here, it's, you know, usually I start usually right after Thanksgiving, stuff starts priming up, and we run to the middle of February. Some of you northern guys get to start in October, and with spring beaver trapping and muskrat, you get to run all the way to March. But once you get started, time flies. And you look at it on a calendar, and you've got plenty of time. But all of a sudden, family stuff starts happening, job stuff starts happening, vehicle stuff starts happening, weather starts happening. All the real life stuff that really affects a trapper starts hitting you. And what seems like a long period of time really gets ratcheted down. And even if you have good weather and you're rolling, time just flies when you're out in the woods doing what you're supposed to be doing, which is setting traps and catching critters. So think about how you're setting. What is the style that you're trying to set at? Because if you understand the style that you're trying to set, you'll have a better chance of being more productive. And I think most trappers want to be the highest productive trappers that they can be, if they're going to be honest with themselves. They want to catch the most with the amount of time that they have. And everybody's time is different. Everybody's weather's different. Everybody's locations are different. Terrain's different. There's all kind of different things that play effect into this. But what are some different ways that you can think about trapping? Now, the first one, which I admit is a lot of fun, but it's not very productive, is what I call shotgun trapping. When I came back from Alaska, this is the way that I trapped. I would have coyote stuff in the truck and fox stuff in the truck and some snares and some coon stuff and stuff to catch some mink and muskrats. And I have my 330s for the beaver, have some number 5 long springs for the beaver. And I would head out and I'd get some, you know, some property somewhere and I would go through the gate. I'd see a crossroad or whatever and I'd set up some coyote sets and then I would see a creek and then I'd go, man, there's a mink. I'd probably go right behind that stump and I'd put in a mink set, then there'd be some muskrat runs, and I'd go over there and set the muskrat runs. I'd find a beaver dam, and I'd set the beaver dam. There'd be a bunch of cover around a bunch of water, and I'd set some bobcat sets. I'd find some fox sign, I'd set some fox sign, and it's just like shotgun. I mean, it's going everywhere. It's fun, and if you have a very limited amount of land to trap, there's nothing wrong with it. Don't let other people in different situations with different land opportunities dictate how you're going to trap on your trap line. It's your trap line. It's your trap line. And sometimes shotgun trapping, especially with kids, can be a lot of fun. or if you're trying to teach somebody, or you got a young person with you. Because you can cover a lot of different things with somebody in a short amount of time, because you'll be setting a lot of different type sets. You know, this place looks like it's more Gray Fox. Why? You set some Gray Fox sets up. This place looks a little catty. Set some cat sets up. Looks a little coyote. Set some coyote sets up. You come across some water. What's here in the water? What do we have access to? Do we have mink, muskrats, beaver, nutria, otter? What is it that we have, and what am I looking at, and what is the land showing me that I can set? The issue with this on efficiency is that it takes a lot of time to go through a small piece of ground to set this way. But if you only have a small amount of ground, don't worry about it. Just set it and have fun. A lot of places you can't road trap. A lot of places your WMAs are just overrun with dog hunters, deer hunters stealing your stuff, and you may only have two or three farms. Dude, I wouldn't think one bit against shotgun trapping. You have to be more organized as a trapper to do this, because you're going to be able. You're going to need to have everything that you need for muskrats, otter, mink, beaver, coons, fox, gray fox, coyotes, bobcats. Whatever's in your area, you need to have that stuff in your truck so when you come across it, you can get it. Now, the issue with this type of trapping, it's highly inefficient per night, per trap, most of the time. And it's inefficient because you spend a lot of time in a small area for animals. And most places don't have a huge amount of everything in a small area. But if it's what you need to do, then I would say go ahead and do it. But if you're going to shotgun trap, understand what you're doing. Now, the downside of shotgun trapping is the inefficiency. Because I started off doing this, not on purpose, not because I planned it this way, just because I was so excited the trapping season was open, and I had some properties to set. And I'd be, I can set something over there. And then I've got some water animals over here. And then in between here, I'll set this up. And look, there's some trails. It's hanging some snares. And I would go about it. And you work all day long on a small piece of ground. And then you realize the next day when you go to check, you're done checking by like 9:30 in the morning. Now, if you're going before and after work, that may not be a bad thing. But if you've taken time off, now what are you going to do for the rest of the day? You could have another piece of ground and repeat this and repeat this and repeat this. But if you've got a lot of ground, I don't think this is the most efficient way, and we'll cover this in a minute. Now, the other way is long lining. This is what, for my generation, coming up, these were the superstars of trapping. They were running trap lines that were 200-300 miles long. They were running hundreds and hundreds of traps and snares. And they were piling up animals, it seemed like, at an epic rate. Long lining, you know, just going after the cream, running and gunning, all that good stuff that people like to talk about. But there's one caveat to this for this to work. You need a good way to get from one set to the next, roads or water. And you need a ton of property, which usually consists of several counties. To do this, from my experience from talking to trappers at conventions and instructions and schools and all that, most trappers don't have this unlimited amount of ground. See, I've been in places where you could long line and not have one single written permission of property. I've been in New Mexico where there's literally a section of government ground that's 500,000 or 1 million acres. I could cross a highway, go through a town, and have another 1 million acres. No permission needed. BLM land. And when I went out there, the longliner way of going about it is the way that me and another friend did it. We set sparse. We set on tracks and locations. We set the obvious places. And we rolled and rolled and rolled down the line. At one point, me and Ed Blue had about 180 miles of line out, probably 175 traps on the best locations that we came across, and we were done checking by noon. Now, to a lot of people in the East, that sounds really insane. Because if you're in the East, you know, a big farm could be 1,000 acres. If you're in Delta country, it could be 5,000 acres. If you've got some hunting clubs, it could be a couple of 1,000 acres. But for the most part, most trappers realistically are dealing with 40 to 100 acre farms. And you got to open and close a lot of gates. You got to get on the road. And you got a lot of dead space and stuff like that. When I was trapping in Texas all the time, I would start trapping within 3 minutes of leaving the bunkhouse. And it could be 70,000 acres. So it made sense to longline something like that. You didn't set iffy places, you set the places. You set the best travel ways, and you ignored the lesser travel ways. If you didn't see sign, you didn't waste your time putting traps in. You were rolling. You were getting it done off of volume and miles and percentages, but not really so much, and I'll be honest, not so much off of skill. A lot of longliners are very good at looking at ground and picking an okay location and putting in an okay set. But if you do that enough, guys, you'll have a huge catch at the end of the day. If you can put 150 traps out on decent locations spread out over three counties, you're going to have a good catch. You may not be the most skilled trapper to do that, but you're probably going to be one of the most hardworking trappers to do that. And you're going to have to be disciplined. You're going to have to be mentally tough. And you're going to have to realize you're basically a truck driver that kind of stops and does something every 15 or 20 minutes. That's what longlining is. It's really cool to read about. It's really cool to see videos about. It gets really monotonous over time because you're not really doing one-on-one stuff with animals. You're playing percentages. And the percentages are actually not that high because you're not really getting involved with the animal so much. What you're doing is you turned into a location set trapper, and the animals are somewhat involved, but not really. But if you've got the land and you need to catch a lot of fur, longlining like you read about back in the 70s and 80s, there's not a better way to make more money during good fur prices if you've got the land access. But what you'll find out about longlining, it's usually very species specific. They're either water trappers for the most part, or they're land trappers for the other part. They don't mix. They're thinking more about one or the other. Their brain's in one place. Not if they're on land, they're not thinking about the water, and they don't even pay attention to it. If they're water trapping, something like coon trapping, they're not going out and trying to set coyote traps. Not real longliners. You can go to Iowa a year that coons are bringing $15 a piece, and there's guys that go out and longline with kill poles and snares that'll have out 2,000, 3,000 snares within 2 days of opening day. It's just percentages. They catch a tremendous amount of fur. Now, the negative side to longlining is it's expensive. It's very expensive to run that much fuel. It's very expensive to run that many traps because you also got lure and bait. You got flat tires. You've got all kind of stuff that goes along with running that far. And you're going to be exhausted because you're driving so much every day. But if the goal is max amount of fur and you have the property, longlining is the way to go. Another way that I look at trapping is being species specific. This takes a lot of dedication's not the right word. Discipline. Because you're going to see really good coon trails if you're coyote trapping or cat trapping. Or you're going to see some really good coyote locations if you're bobcat trapping. But if you're going to be specific to a species, you need to be one-minded, single-minded, driven, and you don't let anything else get in your way. Like, I have not talked to, if I remember his name, he's from northern Missouri. He's red-haired. Oh, I cannot think of his name. Anyway, he set a goal last year of catching, I can't remember his name, I know him well. He set a goal of catching 1,000 coyotes last year, is what I've heard. And he ended up with 900 and something. I can guarantee you what he was not doing was running several species of traps. He wasn't trying to catch coyotes and beaver, coyotes and cats, coyotes and mink, coyotes and muskrats, coyotes and this. So if you're going to set a goal for yourself that you want to catch 1,000 coon or a couple hundred coyotes or a couple hundred cats, or 1,000 muskrats, or 500 or 600, or 1,000 beaver. You want to set a goal, whatever your goal is. You need to focus on that and nothing else. I personally enjoy this style of trapping. There's a neat thing happens when you do this style of trapping, guys. It really, really comes clear after about 4 or 5 days of doing this. You get so focused on the species. You get so focused on sign. You get so focused on travel ways and so focused on locations. Your brain knows what it's supposed to be doing and it does it. It's the closest thing outside of the military that I know of getting so zeroed in on what you're actually going to do that you become almost absorbed into it. It's really cool when you push that. But again, to do something like that, you're going to need lots of ground, or as much ground as you can get, or be somewhere where you can run the roads, or you have a lot of public ground, BLM land, something out of a boat, whatever it is, that you can really concentrate on a single type of critter. But if you do that, you will notice things. You will start feeling things. You know, not to get too, purple or fuzzy about it, but you start becoming almost involved with nature when it comes to that species. You really do. It's something I wish most trappers would do a couple of years of, because you learn so much when you're only focused on one thing. You learn very quickly what's good, what's okay, and what is a waste of time. But if you're shotgun trapping, you probably don't figure that out. If you're long lining with just the principles of long lining, two traps on location and run, you're probably not going to learn a whole lot. But if you get very species specific, you're going to learn. And it's going to make you a better trapper. And the cool thing about that is, that's an education and experience you'll have for the rest of your life that you cannot pay for in a book, a DVD, or instruction. So it's being species specific. Now, the type of trapping that I'm more used to, especially as I got older, was per square mile trapping. I talk about this a lot in my Eastern Wolfer book. This came from doing a lot of control work. Very, very different than long lining. It's like the complete opposite of long lining. It's actually the opposite of shotgun trapping. It can be species specific, or it could not be species specific. But per square mile trapping is, you try to catch every single animal on per square mile that you're trapping. And it may not be a real square mile. It could be half a square mile. It could be 10 square miles. But what you're trying to do is that home base of critters, you're trying to put in a trap. The lessons you learn from doing this and what you observe from doing this can be painful and exhilarating all at the same time. So like doing control work, if someone is, you know, hires a guy to do predator work, or they hire me to do predator work, and I go in there and they want all the predators out. First off, I got to figure out what do they consider predators. And then, depending on the size of their farm, it could be 1,000, it could be 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 20,000 acres. I've got to devise a plan to either run it all at one time, or break it down in sections, or cut off all the major travel ways to set those traps up. And I see, I've talked about this before, I only set one trap per coyote travel way. One trap per cat location. One trap per fox location. Because when you're thinking about stuff per square mile, you look at the ground very different. You look at travel ways instead of a location. Like a location could be a lone bush off the corner of a dike coming across a field. Or it could be a crossroads, or it could be a rock wall, or it could be many different things that people look at, the edge of a field. Well, when you're looking at travel ways and you're thinking about per square mile, you're at least in my opinion, you're trying to lock up every single travel way that you can and put equipment on it to catch the animals. Because what I've learned from doing this is animals don't always go to what trappers consider the perfect location. They use a lot of minor locations that most trappers don't set when you're long lining. So I've got to set all those up so when a coyote comes down a deer trail, there's equipment. when he comes around the edge of a field and there's a piece of cover that sticks out in there and I know that's where he's going to be, that's where I want to have a trap, I'm there. If there's a low area going through a field, I'm there. If there's a drainage ditch and there's some cover there, I'm there. I pick every single travel way that a coyote can use and I block it. And if you go about it this way, you're never going to catch the huge numbers that a longliner is going to catch. But what you're going to do is be able to really hammer on the animals that you have. And when you're thinking about coyotes, fox, cats, different things like that, if you're on 2,000 acres and you hammer that population, say out of 2,000 acres you end up with 15 or 20 coyotes and you end up with 5 or 6 cats and a dozen fox, next year you're probably going to have as many animals to catch as you would because all of that surrounding land around it, no one's probably touching. So you're not hurting the population from year to year, but what you can do is you can really go into an area, set it up, catch your stuff, go to a new area, set it up, catch your stuff. You can catch a lot of animals this way, but it won't be the same as longlining. But it's not as expensive. You don't have to travel as far. You're not in the truck like a truck driver as much. And I think you become a better trapper from going about it this way. I've talked about this before. It's a way that I think that I've used. I've taught other trappers this. It's called a progressive line. You pick the animal that's most important. It can be because of deer, coyotes. It could be because of money. It could be otter. It could be beaver. It could be mink. It could be whatever it is that you're really focused on catching. It could be market-based, or it could be predator control-based, or it could be goal-based. It doesn't matter. And you go in that area, and you concentrate on that particular animal. Once you get your land, the mount that you have set up, and you get everything set up where you've got it all covered, then you can go, okay, what's plan B? What's the second tier animal I want to catch? So it could be if I was going after bobcats, I would want to set every bobcat trap on the best locations that I could find. Once I get those set up, instead of just running those traps, I may have 2 or 3 hours at the end of the day that I still got time to set. So I'm going to go, what's tier two? Could be coyotes. So when I'm setting bobcat traps, I'm thinking bobcats. I've only got bobcat stuff in the truck. I'm looking only for bobcat locations. I'm only looking for bobcat tracks and bobcat sign, and I move down through there. When I go to second tier, say coyotes, now I've only got coyote stuff in the truck. I'm only thinking coyotes. I'm only thinking coyote travel ways. I'm only thinking coyote sign and coyote scat. But while I'm setting these traps out, I'm only checking the bobcat traps that I set previously. And if I get bobcats and coyotes out, in the south it could be gray fox. Could be beaver, could be mink, could be anything. Then, running the same route, I have this other, say if it's beaver. I'm coming across a lot of swamps and beaver dams and stuff. So now when I go to run the third section of this line, progressive line, not like progressive liberal, because this is actually good, but a progressive line, I've got only beaver stuff in the truck. I'm only thinking beaver. I'm only looking for beaver sign. I've got beaver on the brain, but I happen to be checking coyote and bobcat sets as I'm beaver trapping. And you can repeat this all the way down the line, depending on how much time you have on a place. Now, sometimes it should be based off of time to catch most animals. So if I'm going into an area that's like, say, Arkansas or Mississippi, and I'm water trapping, I know I need time for otter is more time than it takes to catch most of the beaver. So I'm gonna go otter first because they need more time to soak. And then I'm gonna go beaver because they need less time to soak. And then I might switch into muskrats or something like that. But if I was muskrat and mink trapping, I would put the mink stuff out first because they need more time to be on trails and the edge of banks and stuff to catch more, most of the mink, than the muskrats do, which happen very quickly. Bobcats normally take more time than coyotes. Not to get too deep in the weeds, it has a lot to do with moon phases and stuff like that. But I would rather have, if bobcat prices are higher, I'm going to focus on the bobcats and then go for the coyotes. If coyote prices are higher, which they are right now, I'm going to focus on coyotes and then bobcats, then fox, then water animals. See what I'm saying? That's a progressive line. And then we have you guys, bless your heart. Y'all probably have the hardest job of any trappers out there, and you trap before and after work. Maybe you've got enough time on the weekends away from the family that you can go check and reset. So a lot of times there's before and after work and the weekends. On the weekends, you set like your butt's on fire. And during the week, you check what you can to and from work. You can have different routes at different times of the year, you know, different ways to get to work, different roads, different properties, all that type stuff. But listen, for you guys that have to do this before and after work, your efficiency level has to be way higher than somebody like me. Your time spent making sets need to be more efficient than somebody like me. The huge difference is when I'm out trapping, I've got all day. When I'm trapping, that's what I do. So I leave in the morning and I set till I run out of energy or time in the evening. And I come home. You may have 45 miles, 20 miles, 10 miles. You may only be able to set 3 or 4 farms. You may be able to set some in the road and the farms. So you actually have it much tougher than a professional trapper. Because you're trying to do everything that you need to do and just a short amount of time where I can do something all day long, which brings us to a good point. Do not get down on yourself if you see somebody that's trapping all day long, all winter long, and they catch way more fur than you. Well, if they don't, they really suck as a trapper because they've got 12, 14 hours a day. You may have 2. So don't beat yourself up when you see catch pictures. You know, you come across a convention and you come across somebody's table like mine, if I got all my pictures out, and you see, you know, 174 bobcats and 70 bobcats and 130 bobcats and all these coyotes laid on the ground and all these coon in the back of the truck and all these beaver in the back of the truck and all this type stuff. You cannot expect realistically to do what someone like me does in that short amount of time. So don't judge yourself trapping before and after work based off of what we do. That just, I know human nature, you want to, but dude, you're going to get yourself thinking that you're just not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And that probably is not the case. I've got more respect for guys that catch a good amount of numbers of animals than I do professionals that catch a ton of animals. because you've got to do it in a little bitty section of your day. So don't judge yourself. But really think about how you're going to run that before and after work trap line. Is it going to be a shotgun approach? Is it going to be a progressive line approach? Is it going to be a mini long line approach? Is it going to be a specific species approach? What is it that's going to allow you in your area with your amount of animals of the species that you're after to be the most productive trapper that you can be? And only you can come up with that. It really is. Only you can come up with that. But don't beat yourself up because you're not catching what you see in the magazines and in the videos and on YouTube and stuff like that. You don't know what the animal populations are where someone else is. You don't know their time limits. You don't know. When you go trapping, do your best to leave ego and jealousy completely out of it, or you'll drive yourself crazy. But dude, my hat's off to guys that got a trap that way. I've only done it a couple of years. When I first got back from Alaska in the swimming pool business working for another company, I would trap to work and after work. I'd have one route coming in and one route coming out. And that was actually much harder than when I go to Texas and run a couple hundred fence snares and, 100 and 125 bobcat traps. Much harder. My hat's off to you guys. Now, the last thing that I could think of on a different way to run a trap line is weekend warriors. Nothing wrong with a weekend warrior. There's nothing to be ashamed of being someone that just has time because of family and work and obligations and everything else. So you only get to trap on the weekends. But you need to understand the reality of what that means. You might get to start setting on Friday, you got to pull on Sunday. Or you may get to set on Saturday and you get to pull on Sunday. Well, for your own sanity, don't think you're going to catch, 300 coyotes in basically a 24-hour trap check once every 7 days. It's just not reality. Now, if you're on your own piece of ground and you get to do that and you catch 5 or 6, 10, 12 coyotes, whatever it is, dude, you're rocking and rolling. Most coyotes don't get caught until the 72-hour mark. That's just the way it is. I've trapped all over the country. Yeah, you catch them the first night. Yeah, you catch them the second night. Most of the time before most coyote lines get rolling is 72 hours. You just need to understand that before you think you're going to do it on a 24-hour check and pull. But what you can do as a weekend warrior is things that don't take as much time. Coons, fox, gray fox, female cats, beaver. You can do some serious damage with 24-hour trap checks on those animals. Now, just like the guys that trap before and after work, and you got the guys that only get trapped on the weekend. If you're going to try to catch things that need more time, you can look at different ways to keep your traps there, snapped off, or set with a cover on there. Like Chip Davis at Expanded Pants has got a cool thing that you can put over your trap so it can't fire. And then come back Friday evening, you just pull these things off and your set's ready to go. You can do it with plywood and different things like that. What Chip does is just much simpler. Now, for water trappers, if you've got otter crossings and stuff like that, and you don't have to worry so much about theft, eventually you're going to catch that otter coming in on the weekends. just don't get beat up on a 24-hour check if your truck's not full every day, unless you're going after things like beaver, coons, muskrats, stuff like that. You have a very short, limited amount of time per set sitting there to catch an animal. Now, yeah, there's a trail with tracks running down it. That could be Tuesday and Thursday and next Monday. That's just the way that it is. They may not even be there on the weekend. But if that's the situation you find yourself in, when you catch stuff, let me tell you something. You're doing better than somebody like me that catches 10-something a day when I've got all day to do it and all week to set it and catch it. You probably got the hardest task a trapper can have. So when you do catch stuff, realize what you've done. You've done damn near the impossible. And that should speak a lot to you about what you're doing. You should be thrilled to death. If you go out and you set 35 coyote traps on Saturday and you catch one or two coyotes and you got to pull them the next day, you are crushing it. And that's the truth. Not internet truth, that's the truth. You're crushing it. If you catch one coyote a weekend and you got to set and pull every weekend, dude, you are rocking. Don't get down on yourself. But at the same time, don't think you're going to catch 50 coyotes a year doing that. Your situation has limited yourself. Do what you can with what you've got and be proud of what you catch. Same thing for the before and after work guys. I hope tonight's show has maybe brought some clarity to some guys that are getting ready to go out. It doesn't matter which style of line you run. Do it to the best of your ability, but understand the style that you're running and its limitations and its positives. Every type of line has negatives and positives. Every one. One is not the best. One is not the worst. It's just what it is. But keep in mind why you go out there. When you're digging in a dirt hole and you smell that fresh earth and you come back the next morning, if you're on the weekend, and you see 7 sets that haven't been touched, and then you've got a coyote with frost on its back and it's yelping at you, dude, that's something to rejoice for. You may look at nothing but empty traps the rest of the day. Dude, you crushed it. If you're going to run long lines and you're going to catch 15, 18 coyotes a day, or 8 or 9 cats a day, or 30 beaver a day, or 65 raccoons a day, or whatever it is, you have worked your butt off to do that. Be proud of what you catch. And I know this time of year, there's going to be a lot of guys that get discouraged really quick. There's an old saying, all plans fall apart the first time you get punched in the face. Trapping is nothing but ways for nature, people, vehicle, roads, laws to punch you in the face. And I know that young guys especially, they watch a lot of videos. In their mind, they're going to go out and just like break records their first year. And within a couple of weeks, they get very discouraged. That is not how a trapper should look at what he's doing, in my opinion. Every day should be a learning experience. Every set should teach you something. Every catch, every miss, every non non-catch? Maybe it's not the best location. Why is it not working this way? Is there a better way to set this up? Is there a better way to control the coyote or a cat or a fox or a beaver? Trapping is accumulative over years of experience. And there's no way that you can watch videos and gain that experience. I wish there was, but there's not. So as you thrive, or you get beat, or you get discouraged, just keep in mind, the more experience you get, the better you're going to be. Most crafts in life, they say it takes 10,000 repetitions to become a master. See, I think if trappers looked at that and they had 10,000 good sets, they would become a master of what they're doing. But unfortunately, a lot of people get discouraged with false confidence from a new technique, a new lure, a new set, a new location, and they get discouraged. And they just find ways to not go out and do it again because their ego gets bruised, even if no one else knows who it is. But trapping should be about learning. You learn a lot about yourself. You learn about the weather. You learn about the animals. You learn about their habits. And the more that you get that in your brain, before long, guys are going to be asking you how to do stuff. And it's because you put in the 10,000 reps. That should be the goal. And don't get so focused on the numbers. I used to do this when I was younger. Focus on quality instead of quantity. You'll be happier and you'll be smarter at the end. So if you ever need to go for the quantity, you'll have the experience for it. But understand the type of trap lines that you're running so you can do them the best that you can to have the most fun and the most production. And just have fun. Enjoy it. Because as you get older, you may not be able to physically do what you wanted to do one of these days. So go ahead and do it now. And I will talk to y'all next week. Y'all go have fun. Catch some stuff. Get your stuff ready. If you're not trapping yet, it's game time, guys.